Alrighty, we are in for our final show of the season. The Lakers falling out in Bemidji on the weekend. We'll talk about that in detail here. We want to remind everybody we will not have a Laker hockey talk this Thursday morning. That show is a preview of what's coming up, and there's not anything coming up this weekend, so we'll dispense with that show for this week, and we will have Laker Hockey Talk on monthly starting in May, and we'll run five of those where we'll podcast them as well and talk about what the Lakers have in mind, the schedule, and all that sort of thing. We're going to try to get into some of that stuff here tonight. This is our wrap-up show. The Lakers did a good job. I watched two of the games and listened to the other one on the weekend from out in Bemidji. And, you know, devil's advocate here tonight, I don't think that the league wanted the Lakers to win that series. I don't think they wanted anything short of two teams in the NCAA tournament. The only way they could have that would be Bemidji State, which was ranked 10th going in the weekend, and Minnesota State ranked 3rd going into the weekend. They've got to have those two teams win. This whole league's run out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. You got two teams from Minnesota. You're up against it. And, you know, Damon, devil's advocate aside, I knew on Sunday night when 45 seconds into the hockey game, Yuki Miura gets an interference penalty. I'm like, they called 3 penalties last night in the whole game, yeah. And here we go.
Well, you know, it's a tough intro for me, Bill, yeah. But you're going to get me right in trouble there. But, no, you're right. I mean, the night before, there's 3 penalties. We went 0-for-1. They went 0-for-2. I thought our guys did a really good job. And like you said, 45 seconds into the game, there's a face-off interference in the offensive zone, and you're kind of looking at each other like, what's going on? This is a game 3. You know, and I think it got worse from there, quite honestly, you know, and, you know, hey, you sometimes you got to fight through that and win games, even when you're not getting the calls, but it did seem, you know, over the top. You know, they scored a 5-on-3 goal. They had a penalty shot, our goal that was overturned. You could never see the puck like that to me. You know, as much as there was that you didn't like about some of the calls and the penalty shot, like it just seemed really over the top, but that's what did it for me. You know, it kind of, you know, you want your players to have a chance. You want the kids on the ice to decide it and your players to get a fair shot. And it felt like that got ripped away in some ways because of that. So really disappointing. But again, on the replay, you know, the camera's up behind pocket side there and it's so far away, but the puck is not visible. It enters close enough to the boards with Max Humitz that on the replay, at least according to the refs on the ice, they had the same we went and watched it after the second period. I came out in the third period, said, hey, tell me what you guys saw, because we just watched it back. They had the same replay as us. According to them, you can't see the puck at all, and you're supposed to have indistinguishable video evidence to overturn a call on the ice. It sure as heck was not possible to overturn it based on what they had, and you know, just a total blown call. And you know, that obviously is a makes it 2-1 going into the third period, much different field than 2-0. Then Max comes out, scores a great goal to make it or get our first goal, which should have been our second goal. And just really disappointing, really disappointed for our players that they didn't have a chance to you know, fight for it and get it done in a more legitimate manner. So, you know, I guess that's probably some strong words there, but I think it's how we feel. And I think it's what happened, as you said, 45 seconds in, and the way that game progressed was really frustrating. We had some chances. You know, they had a couple, I think, in the second period. They took 3 in a row, and our power play, I thought, really struggled. And the Bemidji penalty kill did an outstanding job. They're really good and really aggressive. So there were some chances there, but it did feel like it was a bit of a, you know, taken away from us in some manner. So I guess enough said, and I think it's legitimate to talk about. But you got to overcome it, I guess, in some ways. But a lot of good things on the weekend as well. And I thought we did a good job to extend it to 3 games. I thought Friday night, our first 20 minutes in particular, was unbelievable. We had a great start to the game. You know, 2 or 3 posts, 4 posts, I think, in the game, 2 or 3 in the first period. I felt like we could have been up by a couple of goals early on. But you know, we didn't put it in. We hit the post, and then you're down 1-0. And I thought we fought and had our chances and opportunities and a great game Saturday night to take that one and really clamp down with the big lead. And then they got the late goal. Really, you know, even that game when we're up by 2 goals going into the third period, we came out in the third period. Chase Gamblin walked in all alone. Yuki Miura walked in all alone. Louis Bidon split the D and kind of ended up with Pete Viette, who had a great grade A scoring chance. And then Max Humitz got the rebound right off of that. We had four or five grade A's to make it a 3-goal separation, and we didn't score. They scored a little bit, you know, with what, 6 or so minutes left, and really put a hard push on. But we held on with some tremendous goaltending and extended to 3 games. And as we said, you know, we couldn't crack through and got the one pulled away in a bit of a travesty. But like the fight, and I know we'll talk more about the team and the makeup in the season, but I thought we pushed really hard. And the season was disappointing, you know, when there's no, and I guess maybe that's one of the big takeaways. You know, you can't allow yourself to be in seventh place. We underachieved in the first half. We weren't very good in the first half. I thought we showed tremendous growth and really proud of the team to stick together and, you know, be coachable and be accountable and pull together and get better. And we climbed and climbed and climbed. I don't think we're a seventh place team, but, you know, that's what we earned. It's over the course of the season there. So that maybe that's the big lesson. You know, we've got to be a home ice team. We've got to create better matchups in the playoffs because Bemidji is a heck of a team, well-deserving of their 10th ranked and 11th ranked after the weekend. And, it's tough to go in there and win certainly 2 games in a row there. And, I thought we gave ourselves a chance.
Yeah, you look at the series itself, not very many penalties called in the first game, 3 in the second, 12 penalties in that third game, 7 against Lake Superior, and it was the timing of them. We took 4 or 5 in a row from late in the first period into the second period. And, you know, I said to my wife when they got the 2-man advantage for a minute two, I go, Brady's going to score. They're too good a team. You can't give them a 2-man advantage
for that long.
Sure enough, there you go, and we're down when we shouldn't have been. And, you fought hard. I think this team deserves a tremendous amount of credit for the job they did in the second half of this season. But, you know, you go back to the first half and you're like, you know, where were we? We weren't the same team. But, you know, that's what goes with maturation. We didn't have 4 lines early. We did late. There were a lot of things we can talk about here about how well we did in the second half of this season. I looked today. Pat O'Neill gave me some stats this morning about the penalty kill, for instance. The Laker penalty kill in the second half of the season from January 3rd on, and we played Anchorage, we played Ferris, we played Huntsville, we also played Michigan Tech, Northern Michigan, and Alaska in there. Those are good teams, and our PK is 5th in the nation. That's better in the second half than Minnesota State, Bemidji, and Alaska, all the teams who were like 6th, 7th, and 8th. Yeah. So our penalty kill was outstanding in the second half at 896. The big problem we had throughout the year, we've talked about this 25 times this season, we just didn't produce enough goals. We didn't score enough. Our power play was not good. And that's probably why we were 7th instead of 4th or 5th.
Yeah, consistently, you know, there were those games we'd jump and have offense, and, you know, those felt good. You know, when that secondary scoring came around, it made a big difference as well. And, you know, you kind of mentioned, you know, what happened first half. I think part of it, when you look back at it, certainly Braden Gelsinger, you mentioned the 4 consistent lines of the depth. You know, when Braden got healthy, it gave us a true legitimate top 6, some experience, the guys who've played there and can contribute on a night in and night out basis. So Braden Gelsinger was a big loss. And even when he got back, certainly not 100%, he was off a long time with that hamstring injury. And I think we saw the true Braden the last probably month or so, where he was really, really good. But, you know, we had guys playing too high in the lineup. And I think the other big part, you know, I haven't really talked much about it at all, but we had 2 freshman centers, you know, all season long, you know, probably in our top 9, quite honestly. And beyond a freshman defenseman who has to step in and play a top 4 role, playing center when you move from junior hockey to college hockey or college to pro, that's a really, really difficult position to transition and play against. So, you know, you go on the road, and what do you think Notre Dame or Michigan doing? They're putting a top scoring line out against a freshman center, and, you know, that makes a big difference. So the growth that we saw from Dustin Manns over the course of the season has been tremendous, and it bodes well for the future. And Louis Bidon, who ends up being the highest scoring freshman forward in the league. But, you know, that first month or two or 2-3 months, you know, they're getting adjusted. They're playing against men. And I think that was part of it as well, you know. So that was challenging to break guys in that position. You know, we moved Gage Terrell to center around Christmas last year. So you went Diego down, Cuglietta, Terrell, Erickson down the middle. And when you lose 2 of those guys, you know, we had some inexperience in a really important position. So I think that took some time for them, those guys, to adjust. And we couldn't handle some of that early on, but the growth was really good. And, you know, the penalty kill, like you said, had great growth over the course of the season. Who's your best penalty killer? It's your goaltending, you know. And Merrick Mittens from November 23rd which was the second Bowling Green game, had a 2.06 and a 93 save percentage. You know, we'd be top 4 or 5 in the country from that November date. Now, earlier on, again, you know, we didn't have the start that he wanted or that we needed from him. You know, he certainly showed what he can do, what he's capable of doing, and certainly the high, you know, high mark he sent coming into next season there. So I think there's a lot of things that will bode well for the future, but there's no question that, you know, we underachieved and we weren't good enough this season. And, you know, that falls on me to have us more prepared and have the right pieces in place. And so, you know, we've got a lot to look at and to correct and make sure we're better next year.
Well, you've listed a lot of things here, reasons why we started slowly. Your schedule was very difficult, too. I mean, you're playing Denver and Michigan on the road and Notre Dame on the road. Those first 6 games, I think you called it the gauntlet at the time. I think that's a good description of it. That's very difficult when you're talking about Louis Bonnone and Dustin Manns trying to win faceoffs.
Yeah, you know, exactly. I mean, you're going in and getting those matchups in critical places. And so you don't control a lot of those matchups on the road. And then guys have to go in and play against juniors and seniors and you know, older guys who've been around or established. And that's not an easy task to do. So, you know, yeah, I mean, looking back, I probably win the schedule. Maybe that schedule was meant for a year earlier with some of our more experience. But I thought it was, you know, good for us to see that competition. And, you know, we needed to win a couple more. You know, we obviously couldn't keep the puck out of the back of our net. And that wasn't just on goaltending. That was as a team. You know, we were just, you know, uncharacteristically really poor defensively early on. You know, and actually to me, it's pretty surprising when you look at those D numbers. We lose Sockerman, and I never would have guessed that we could lose a guy like Colin Sockerman, who's a top pairing anywhere in the country and one of the highest scoring guys, a great shutdown guy, a shot blocker, and make that significant improvement. So, you know, I know we'll talk about the future and losses, you know, at this point, and not, you know, Colin's an unbelievable player, an unbelievable teammate, and I would take him, you know, 10 times over. And if I'm in pro hockey, he's a guy I'd always want. But he's not a loss next year for us because he hasn't played the last 20, 24 games or something like that. So we've already kind of figured out our pieces without him there. Unfortunately, I wish we didn't have to, but we did there. So, you know, there's a lot as you're looking forward that you can kind of, you know, start to manipulate your lineup and what D pairings and things like that look like as you lose those seniors. And again, him we consider a loss early this year because of that injury.
Yeah, before I leave this subject too, this penalty kill, I looked at these stats today and I know it's much improved because I'm at most of the games and so I see what's going on, but it was 896, which is 5th in the nation. After the first half of the season, our penalty kill was 47th in the nation. I mean, that's a tremendous improvement. That is a really big tribute to Marek Smittens, who leads the way when it comes to penalty killing. But it's Will Riedel, it's Jacob Nordquist, it's Lucas Kybel, it's Tyler Anderson, it's young Arvid Henriksen. They got better and better and better.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's, you know, we were talking today as a coach, you know, when you look at the losses, you know, Diego was our top faceoff guy and a penalty killer. Nelly killed in our top 4. Gage killed in our top 4. So we knew there'd be, you know, take some time to replace guys. You know, I thought Hampus Eriksson was unbelievable on the penalty kill. Didn't kill at all last year, and he came along, and then Yuki didn't kill much last year either. And all of a sudden, down the stretch run, Hampus Eriksson and Yuki Miura were our top 2 killers. We came back typically with Braden Gelsinger and Max Humitz, 2 guys who had killed, and then Brendan McKay and Ashton Calder, you know, as a sophomore, was one of our top penalty killers as well. And Ashton, I don't think, did much, if at all, as a freshman because of some of that experience in front of them. So, again, we knew there'd be some challenges early on because of just replacing guys who, you know, killed big minutes. And I think, you know, in the future, we'd like to rep a couple more guys and gain some young guys some more experience there. So we'll lose a couple of key guys, but again, our top 2 guys, if everybody's returns, which I'm sure we'll talk about that as well. But right now, Hampus and Yuki, they return. They're among our top killers. Ashton Calder will be one of those top guys as well. So we'll return more experience to start off and again, have a higher expectation coming out to start the season next year.
Yeah, just to hit on Mick Mittens again before we take our first break here on the Laker Hockey Show tonight. Marek Mittens in the second half of the season was 1.97 goals against average with a 9.29 save percentage. That's number 12 in the nation right there, playing on a 7th place team in the WCHA. First half of the season, he was 3.00 goals against with an 8.98 save percentage. So for the season, he's 2.57 with a 9.11 save percentage. But I'll tell you what, he was outstanding. We said this time and again going down the stretch. He was He played really well at Bemidji. I mean, this is a team that lost at Bemidji earlier this year, 7-1, 5-1, come back 2-0, beat them 5-3, lose a controversial game on Sunday night 3-1. I'd say there was a marked improvement in the Lakers in the second half of this season.
Well, there was. There's no question, you know. And again, we've got to, and I've got to figure out ultimately, you know, how we don't let that start happen again. And, you know, I do think as you discuss it and break it down, and we've certainly done that during the season. I mean, so much of your time is prep and recruiting time. You're not always reflecting and, you know, analyzing some of the things going on internally, and you get to do a lot more of that once the season concludes. But, you know, we think part of it too. You know, we came off the best season in 20 plus years. You know, there is, and we did try to guard against it and, you know, preach about it a little bit. But I think a part of human nature is, you know, hey, we've arrived a little bit here, guys. And I think there was a little bit of that, you know, we took the foot off the pedal a little bit. Again, we didn't want to as coaches. It was not our intention. But I think we can learn from that as well. But, you know, as soon as you start thinking you've done something or achieved something, you're in big, big trouble. But I do think there was a little bit of that in the locker room where, like, hey, all of a sudden we're puffing our chest a little bit. You know, we've got 23 wins and, you know, we're pretty darn good here. And the game can humble you pretty quick. And that's what happened, you know, and we got kind of knocked on our butts there. But the good thing was we picked ourselves up and we got better and better each and every day, and, you know, had a really strong close to the season. So there's you know, some optimism because of that. But you know, we can't let that happen again.
All righty. And we're going to talk about the next season and who's coming back, who's going to be gone. I think we know that. Matt Pocket's going to join us here in our second segment as well. He called the games out at Bemidji, so we'll rub salt in the wounds a little bit more with that one. But we'll be right back with more on the Laker Hockey Show from the Antlers on ESPN 1400. All righty, we are back for second segment of the Laker Hockey Show tonight. Damon Witten, Bill Crawford, as usual. But tonight we're going to do something a little different. We're going to call in Mr. Pocket, who's always here anyway.
Popular.
Yeah, he's a popular guy, all right. And he comes mainly for the food each week, but he does a good job, and he did a great job out in Bemidji on the weekend. And that's why I wanted to call you in here. I know that you've got some strong feelings about what went on out there because you witnessed it firsthand. You were there early in the season, Matt, back in early November when the Lakers got beat 7-1, 5-1, and that was pretty much of a spanking, that series. But much different situation this time around. We watched the first two games, listened to the third game, and, you know, I almost could have orchestrated that third game for you, but it was frustrating, and yet it was a great series. I thought the Lakers played very, very well.
Yeah, and you look at the...
We got something plugged in wrong here. We'll check it out. We'll Damon and I will just...
Try that over. Again next time, yeah. Well,
Damon and I will take over and run with this for a while, but until Matt figures out what's going on. But we've got a bad connection back there with that headset. That's that headset that Scott Cook uses on remote. So, Damon, let's talk a little bit about what might be coming up in the future. We got some great questions from fans who are with us here today while Matt's fooling around with the equipment. We'll talk about what could happen. Got a good question here, I think. The fan says that we had a great locker room this year. What can a coach do to try to influence in coming years to continue to have that real strong camaraderie in that locker room?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think it's, you know, a daily work in progress, you know, and I think that's changed a lot over the years when you talk about today's kids and their need for information and why you're doing something and how you're doing something. So, you know, we try to really stress, you know, building relationships with our players. And, you know, now that the season's over, we don't just, you know, take it off, or, you know, we're around a lot and we're trying to grab guys in different settings and, you know, start working on next year's leadership group. So we'll meet tomorrow as an entire team, the whole returning group. You know, we got to vote some for team awards and take care of some housekeeping, you know, kind of go over the schedule and itinerary. We'll give the guys a little bit of time off to recover and heal their bodies and then start workouts. But really the big thing is going to be start identifying, you know, new leadership core and who's going to be leaders on next year's team and what that looks like. helping those leaders, define their roles and how we could use them. And like I said, for us, you're always, we've got guys that we've got to kind of build back up, guys who didn't have the years that they hoped or wanted, guys who had really good years. You got to find ways to keep pushing buttons and motivate them. And then certainly you're building your team. We're going to have two transfers that all Logan's already with the team, Genuine, and Brandon Percelli will join us this week and kind of move into the locker room for the first time. And so your team's already starting to shift when you lose those senior personalities, and we'll kick them out in some ways right after tomorrow. We'll give them the green light to come work out or skate when they want, but their access to the locker room will be limited a little bit, because you want your new locker room and that new core to start developing its own identity, leaders to emerge, and guys to start figuring out their new roles, right away, even though the freshmen won't be here obviously for a while. So that's all a big part of it. You want this heartbeat to kind of navigate them through what this transition looks like, identify those key guys. Certainly exit meetings will be a big part of that. Guys all did goals sheets before the season. So we'll sit down and see who hit their goals, who didn't hit their goals, if they did, why or how, if they didn't, why or how as well, and then start, shaping new goals for future seasons and, talk a little bit about roles for next year as well. So there's a lot to do, and it takes time. These guys obviously have some school to catch up on. They, the travel, things like that, they miss some school. So we want them to make sure they're doing a good job that way. But, you want to get as much time as you can with them, and that's how we'll try to utilize this next couple months with them.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things develop there. We've got more questions from our fans for the coach here, but we've got Matt's got the headset squared away now, so we'll go back to the subject on the weekend. The Lakers played well. They got beat 2-1, but I think they stunned a lot of people. I could tell Brian Schultz, the play-by-play announcer from Bemidji, was trying to figure out what's going on here in that 2-0 game on Friday night, and it got even worse for him on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers hit a couple of posts early in that game, and I think it's conceivable that they go into the first period, what, up 3-4-1 even. It's entirely possible. You look at how the rest of that game played out. Well, again, they wound up hitting a post, and Bemidji State, I mean, they almost kind of went into a full game penalty kill in 5-on-5 at that point. They were content to just kind of lug it out the center, dump it down, make us reset, make this Laker team just go back and fetch over and over and over again and try to set that offense up. Second game, the Lakers don't miss the net. They don't hit those posts. They're beating Driscoll on everything. And I thought Driscoll, I thought he was good on Sunday. I thought he looked nervous in those first two games. I thought he was outplayed by Merrick Mittens, who had, on every night, one save that just blew our minds. I mean, anybody who watched that save Friday night when he was on his stomach and he flicked his right foot out and snagged it out of the
Scorpion.
Air. I mean, that was incredible.
Scorpion save.
Yeah.
And Matt, let me just jump in. Like, one thing I thought, we didn't really talk to the team about this, but I know internally as coaches, you go back a week or 2 weeks now, they just had a near sellout crowd. They were playing for a WCHA championship, in home ice throughout. So, as a coaches, we felt like Friday night was really the night to go in and really stun them. There'd be a little bit of a, maybe a little bit of a letdown or a hangover from those crowds and then just the intensity of the WCHA championship on the line. So we really felt like Friday night was the night to a chance to jump them. We kind of did it, except for scoring.
Yep.
And then, Saturday we knew they'd be better, and we came out and had a good win there. So that was kind of our thought going in, too, that Friday night was a real good chance to stun them a little bit because of what they were coming off.
Yeah, I think when you look at how that series played out, absolutely. I thought you were the better team throughout most of that Friday night. Really the first half of that Friday
first 40,
night game.
Yeah.
On Saturday, I mean, just an outstanding effort start to finish. And then Sunday, the difference winds up being that – what do we want to call it? The mistake in Minnesota. I mean, it's got to have a name.
Well, the 5-on-3 goal too. That was a big momentum point. And then, like you said, the reverse goal was huge for sure. So
that winds up being the difference in the entire series, though, which shows you how critical some of those moments in these hockey games are. There weren't many goals to be had in that Sunday game, which again, not to harp too much on this, but that is a giant chunk of the series right there. Max scores, 30 seconds into the third period. That's a completely different phase of play that's independent. And goals change games, sure, but there's a real chance that that's a 2-2 game in the beginning of the third period. Both teams now change what they're doing the rest of
Absolutely.
The way. It changes everything that plays out after that.
We did talk a little bit, too, after this, going into the third period on Sunday night. And it's funny, guys don't really remember. We said, hey, remember Bemidji Saturday night in our building, what was the score? And none of the players remembered or knew. So, and then it made me doubt what I thought I knew. But, you know, we were down by two going into the third period at home.
Yeah.
We tied it up, won in overtime. And again, the guys, it's funny. I wish I was 20 years old again. But, you know, they didn't remember, you know, how that game worked out. They kind of remembered the overtime win. But, hey, you know, we've been here, and we had full faith that we could do the same thing this weekend. You know, but 2-1 is different than 2-0, you know, even though they call it the worst lead in hockey. But Max comes out, ties it, man. You've got all the – they're tightened up, and they're nervous, and we're feeling great. And, you know, I think we go on to win that hockey game. So, you know, that's the way the game's played. But, you know, again, I thought we made a good push, but he came up short. And that 2-7 matchup was a little bit much to overcome.
I think that shows off, though, the resiliency of this team. And that's the word that we used post-game to describe what I feel is the defining characteristic of this team, the resiliency of this group, the character of this group, because this is a team that went out to Bemidji a couple of months ago in early November and got thrashed there. I mean, it was not a great effort at all. A couple of weeks later, you're down in Bowling Green and had another effort that just wasn't very good, and the next night they came out and played with that passion, that commitment, the resolve to go down there and beat a ranked Bowling Green team. Then the win against Bemidji again, and over we saw that from this team this year, the resilience that in big moments, and I said this going into Saturday night's pregame too, this team finds a way in those key moments to dig down and find something else, something more, and propel them to something good. And we saw that again Saturday night. And I thought to a large degree in Sunday night's game too.
Well, we did in the second half, you know, and so we can't discount our failure to do that in the first half. And that's why you're sitting in seventh place, you know, so that's something, again, I've got to fix and make sure it doesn't take till November in a couple bad losses at Bemidji State. You know, again, early on, we couldn't keep the puck out, and then we played Roman on Saturday night and got beat handily 5-1 on Saturday night as well. So Roman, I think, first start of his career at that point, and you know, the team in front of him, we just weren't defending well. And so, but that was kind of the aha moment that, hey guys, if we're going to do something here, you know, we're going to have to commit to playing better defensively and doing a better job. And so that was an important weekend to get guys. And credit to the players, they bought in.
Yep.
They could have tuned
Absolutely.
Us out. They could have said, hey, we're going to do it our way and figure this out on our own, or just shut us out. But the strength of that locker room, that resiliency, that character, that's when it came through. And you know, it was great to see the response and the team stick together and grow. So that was a rewarding moment.
You know, I think we've got another question from the fans here that has to be directed to Matt Pocket.
Oh,
how's the barbecue at Bemidji?
This is a joint question, actually, because I think, Damon, you were at what was it,
Fozzie's.
I think you were there more than me, because James and I only went, once, I think. We meant to go two or three. I think you were there three times.
I made it twice. Just so twice. We do a team meal there, you know, and you're always kind of worried, you know. Obviously you got to feed the team and you want them to be prepared and do that, and so you never know how much they're going to feed. Is it enough? These guys eat so much food, and obviously you know, budgets and all that stuff. But we got turned on to Fozzie's a couple of years ago, and we've made it our Thursday night stop. And as soon as we got in there, Max Humid said, "That was my favorite meal of the year." So I felt better, you know, once you know the guys like it. And pleasing, you know, 26, 27 guys we've ever had on this trip is not easy to please 27 of them or 23 of them. But Max likes it. And so these guys were sitting around Saturday morning and said, you know, what are you guys doing? And they said the Green Mill. I'm like, the Green Mill's a chain, you know, it's good and it's fine, but like, you know, check out Fozzie's. And so him and James were able to go to Fozzie's and have a good meal. It lived up to billing.
Because we were there back in November. Yeah,
I like my barbecue.
You raved about the cornbread, too. You were a big fan of the cornbread.
Yeah.
But it was a good time. I think things are getting out of control. Yeah. I got nothing. It's a love fest here now, yeah.
We don't care.
I guess the season's over when we're talking about cornbread.
Okay, we do have more questions for Damon from the fans. We'll let Matt stick around here and add his 2 cents whenever he can. But
no more cornbread.
Are there any players on the verge of signing pro contracts right now? I would think there's probably a number of guys on this team, especially Max Humitz.
The seniors are
on the verge.
It's funny. I mean, I just grabbed a phone call at the break there. But I was hoping to kind of breathe for 24 hours and, you know, see my kids and take a little pause, but I've probably talked to close to 20 coaches and, you know, advisors and things like that. So Braden Gelsinger, I don't want to announce anything because I don't know if it's, you know, official through league offices, but Braden Gelsinger is flying out tomorrow morning. He'll hit the road. Zach Isaac and I were talking on the way in. I think Brian Basilico might have just got his deal done. I think Max is making a decision by Thursday. Tyler Anderson's got a lot of calls as well. Brendan McKay's talking to a couple teams as well. I just got a text there. So, yes, Brian Basilico is official. You're all the first to know as of right now. The guys are working on it. You know, I get concerned. It's a little bit rushed. You know, I want to make sure we get home and guys talk to their professors and their school works in order. You know, a lot of our guys are online. A lot of our guys have reduced credits because they've transferred in, things like that. So first and foremost, I got to make sure their professors are willing to work with them to make sure they finish up. But I think the guys have that mostly in order. But you will start seeing releases, whether we do our own releases or retweeting or, you know, putting on our Facebook page or social media, whatever, the signings of these guys. Again, I just want to make sure it's official through their leagues before I comment. Guys are heading out of town already.
Yeah, those are the seniors. We're going to talk a little bit about who might also be going, but I don't know if we want to say anything about that. I would think right now, Damon, that there might be some real strong interest, especially from across the Atlantic Ocean and Merrick's Mittens right now. He finished so strong, he would be tempted at this point, I would think.
Well, you don't know. I mean, you go back a couple of years. I remember sitting, to that school way to the west in the UP, and, my boss, Mel Pearson, came in and said, Jajar just signed. Jajar Kara was a freshman for us and, had a solid freshman year. And, you go to Mitch Holtz and Crispin Doulis. So you don't know. You have no idea. I do know in just a couple of early conversations that the temperature of the room is that they're a little pissed off. A little disappointed in the season, and there's something to prove here, with a guy like Merrick's and some other returners and upperclassmen or returners for next year's team. So I like that they're thinking about next year, and they feel like we have goals on the table and things that they want to do before they leave here and things we need to be better at and something to win and play for. So, I don't know yet. Who knows? I won't be surprised if it happens. I certainly hope we don't lose anybody, but we have, good hockey players that are going to generate interest. I do think with a guy like Merrick's, and I know Lucas had some chances last year, more so overseas, I think their goal is, signing an NHL contract here. They can always return home and play at some point, but they want to, give it a try at the highest level. So, we'll see how it goes, but obviously, we like our team a lot. We like our players a lot, and, we hope they're all back, and that'll be part of those exit meetings. If you do leave early, you better make sure you've got 8-10 teams fighting over you and you're going into a great opportunity. You can't leave because one team wants to sign you because, we see that with Chris. So, I don't know where Bendul is. I haven't followed him a ton this year, but, never came close to playing at the highest level. And you get one chance when you're playing, at the highest level in the world, you get one chance to do this thing right. We've seen it with past players. You got to have 10, 12 teams fighting over you before you even think about it. And I'm not sure we're right there with our underclassmen quite yet. So I hope they're back, and I hope they are pissed off, and I hope they're hungry, and I hope they're ready to prove everybody wrong and earn those 10 contracts. And if they do that, or when we do that, it'll be a tremendous year for us.
All righty. We're going to take a break because we're way past time to do that. We'll be right back with more Laker Hockey Show from the Antlers on ESPN 1400. Okay, back for our third segment. This one's going to be quick. We're going to have to zip through one here. We got another stop set here before we go to our final segment here. We're running out of time as usual. A lot of stuff to talk about as usual on the Laker Hockey Show. It's our final show of the season. We won't be back till next October. In fact, you can pencil in whenever you see the schedule, which is something I want to talk about here. When you see the schedule, put the Tuesday prior to our very first game down. That's when we will be back here at the Antlers for the first Laker Hockey Show of 2020-21. And is there anything on a schedule right now? I mean, I would imagine the league pretty much has things set up, although they probably haven't announced anything yet, because when you go to Florida, you got to fill in the non-conference, et cetera.
Hey, Bill, and before that, will we do some summer shows? We're going to plan on doing a couple
summer
shows.
Yes, we will.
Okay,
we will do those monthly.
Dates, but yeah, we'll do some monthly updates. And
That'll be on Thursday. That'll be Laker
perfect.
Hockey Talk.
Perfect. Okay, good. Yeah, and the WCHA schedule has been out. There's been challenges with a couple different areas and some venues of those teams that don't own the their own buildings. So we just got kind of a revised, updated one not too long ago. But as Bill just mentioned, now as coaches or as administrators, we'll try to start moving things around. The way our schedule stands today, the close of our season is really, really horrible in terms of travel. I think we have our three or four hardest trips of the year all booked within the last 4 or 5 months or a week, sorry. And so, you know, I'm one of those coaches that's trying like everything I can do to navigate some games and maybe, hey, you come home, we'll come there, switch dates or move something to some open dates. So there's a couple schools that are interested in flipping our dates around, and that'll alleviate some of our travel issues late in the year. And, you know, then still always working on some non-conference and a tournament type thing as well. Again, we have a game scheduled WCHA that January, started January, but there's also a tournament that wants us and we'd like to go to. So there's a lot of stick handling still going on with schedule. So that's probably the best I can give you till after Florida.
Now, other than the fact there's maybe a holiday tournament involved, are there any non-conference games or series that are pretty much set now? Do we know somebody who we're going to play? Maybe not when, but who?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know why I can't talk about that. We are planning on going out to Union early in the year next year, and then they'll return that trip, I believe, the following season. I'll have to double check if it's the immediately following season or 2 seasons after. And then, you know, Coach Jackson will be bringing his Notre Dame team up as well. That will be Thanksgiving weekend here in the Sioux, and it is a one game only, not a two game series, unfortunately, because of their game count. But it'll obviously be great to have Coach Jackson back up and the Irish in town here. So we're looking forward to that trip. Again, ideally it would have been two games, but they can't do that based on this year's schedule. And hopefully we can kind of keep a rotation going with them as well. So that's where we're at now. The other non-conference stuff, we're still working on some dates and seeing if it works for both teams before we finalize some details.
Okay, we were talking a moment ago about guys who may be signing, the seniors at least. We didn't mention Colin Sackleman. We do have a question here tonight on how his injury, what the update is there. I think he went and saw his doctor this past weekend.
Yeah, yep. He was home for spring break where he got a surgery back in Minneapolis, and he got a good visit there. He's able to strengthen that leg now and really progress his rehab, which is great. Obviously, we all saw he got the green light to skate on senior night, at least put skates on and do a lap, which I thought was awesome for him. And such a warrior to be able to do that was great for Colin to be out there. So his rehab's progressing well. I do think, you know, without the injury, he'd be one of those guys that would sign for sure, and will be, you know, at minimum American League deal. I think with the injury, I think he still will sign. I think there's still enough interest there. Obviously, that doesn't help when you miss that amount of time, but you know, we had a ton of interest before the injury, and I do think he'll have a good contract at some point, and probably sooner than later, I'm guessing, unless some teams, they might want to bring him in and use their own medical staff to look at him.
Well, there are a lot of highlights to talk about from this past season. We've hit on a lot of them here today, but I just wanted to go down who is coming in and who's coming back. Now, next season, the Lakers hopefully will have Merrick Smittens back in goal. Seth Eisley will be a backup who now has 4 years full of eligibility if he wants to use it. Ethan Langenegger, the freshman, he'll be coming in out of Salmon Arm in the BC League, so we'll have three goaltenders, we're hoping, although we don't know yet what's going on for sure. On defense, Damon, you'll have Rydell back with Keibel, Nordquist, Henriksen, Oliver, Samandel, and Mike Manera. That's a pretty formidable crew. You've lost only Tyler Anderson on defense.
And Sokolman,
that's right.
But been out for a while.
He's been gone so well.
I know, you forget.
We've gotten used to him not being there, although he sure would have helped us down the stretch. Jacob Bengtsson's a newcomer. He'll be coming in out of the USHL. And Jeremy Gervais is coming from the BC League. That's two pretty good defensemen right there who will challenge some of the veterans for playing time.
Yeah, and you mentioned those guys returning. You know, they ended up in our top four or top five defensemen. So again, with Mitz back and Seth returning and the growth he showed, and we've talked a couple times. You know, Seth last summer had some hip and growing issues that he couldn't train much, so he was a little bit behind when he got here. He's been healthy and doing good, so hopefully he'll have another good summer. But he had great growth across the season, and we're really high on Ethan Langenegger. He's having a great playoff run. They swept their first four games and start back up Friday night. He's a teammate with Gervais, who got picked up near the deadline, and I think he ended up finishing leading defenseman in points per game and a smaller sample size coming back from Alberta there. But it's going to be a good group. I think our depth is better in both those positions, our goalie group and D group. from day one, especially when you look at Sockerman going out early this season there. When you go down that left side and you have Kybel and Rydell returning, you know, you feel really good about that. And then Samandel's growth this season and the way he finished the year. So you're returning three guys with a lot of experience there. And then that right side is an area with Sockerman and Anderson out. But, you know, you had Arvid and Will Rydell playing the whole year together, basically, at least post-Sockerman. And then also Nordqvist and Kybel. So really your top four are intact. And like you're saying, you got those Manera and Samandel fighting for spots, and then Bankston coming in with Gervais. And, I'm not sure if we're done. If the right guy's out there, we would still look to add some depth and some stability back there in case there are more injuries. But we really like our group. You know, I think both Jacob and Jeremy can come in and be contributors from day one. It's going to be up to them to earn that and pass somebody. But they're two guys that were really high end that'll help our D-Corps be really outstanding next year.
There's not been a lot of turnover in this defensive core now, really, for the second straight year. You mentioned a couple names earlier, Bill. Rydell, Kybel, Nordqvist. These guys have logged a ton of minutes, not just this year, but last year too. And this feels like a group that's been together for a very, very long time now. And some of these guys, you know, they're going to have a year left of eligibility even after next year. Like Nordqvist is just coming into his junior season now.
Well, it's funny, you know, I think if you go back 2 years, that D-Corps was like a top five scoring D-Corps in the country. We lost Rugsy from it. Was he the only guy? I can't remember. I hope I'm not missing anybody.
But I think it was.
We lost Ruggiero. And, and we really challenged them. You know, we felt like this year's D-Corps could not only provide offense, could be great defensively, and then you see how the season started, you know. So you've got to be a little bit careful of, goals and what you're going to be, because we did not start the way we wanted to start it. Now, we responded. We got a lot better, and we fixed the defending issue. But it is a position of strength. You know, we feel like we can be really good on the back end from goaltending to our D-Corps. That's a really good place to be experienced and strong. And, again, Jacob Benston's playing in the best league, and he's on one of the best teams, and he's having an outstanding year. So we got, you know, when you Sockerman came in from Waterloo as well, and he was one of the highest scoring D's over the last couple of years. And, we know Jacob can come in and play right away, and it's just going to be where he fits in and what those pairings look like.
Another Swede, too.
Another Swede, right? we're going to be all Swedes at the back end at some point.
Well,
so
four
we gotta be careful.
On the team next year. We're a very international team at Lake Superior State. We're going to take a two-minute break. We'll be back. We'll wrap this show up. We'll be right back to the Antlers on ESPN 1400. Okay, we're back for our final segment on our last show of 2019-20. We'll have another show early in October next year before we, I don't know if the first series will be out at Union or what. We've made that trip before. That's definitely a sleeper bus long trip right there. Mr. Pocket may be along for play-by-play on that one. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the forwards now. We've hit the defense. We've got a question here from our fans tonight about how Logan Genuine and Brandon Puricelli are going to fit into things, but let's bring them in here. We're going to have Erickson back. That's a good player returning. We've got Pete Violette, Ashton Calder, Louis Bidon, who I thought got better and better as the season went on. Yuki Miura proved himself this year. Dustin Manns, that's a solid player returning as a sophomore. Miro Muka came on in the second half. We got Chase Gamblin, who was solid in that second half and has been here for 3 years now. And then Alex Ambrosio and Nico Selivanov, they didn't get as much of a chance, although Ambrosio played a lot, but they're valuable parts of this team. That's guys who can all play right there. Then you add in Genuine and Puricelli, and the big question now is, how do you get Genuine and Puricelli to fit into things if they can't play till January? And I know that's not decided yet. You can still protest and try to get them eligible. That'd be wonderful if we get either one of them to be able to play right out of the gate, but it kind of presents a problem if they can't play. They got to practice and just wait, and then how do you fit them in, you know?
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, where I want to start with that is when you look at the returners, there's a couple interesting things, you know. We returned four experienced centers, and so that's good. You know, you've got Hampus, Louis, Manns, and Ambrosio. So, you know, maybe on paper today you've got experience down the middle. A couple upperclassmen and two good sophomores who played in all situations. And, you're built strong through the middle of the ice along with that D-Corps and goaltending you talked about. So that's good. I think the other thing that kind of interesting when you look at some of those returners, we had a pairing that played together most of the year in Erickson and Calder. I thought, you know, tremendous down the stretch. That line was really good. You lose Braden Gelsinger, so you got to hold the fill there. And then you have, Pete Viette and Louis Bidon, who played most of the year together with Humitz on the right side. And then the man's line with Miura and Muka were together for a long stretch at the end as well. So, you know, you've got some little holes to fill in there. And, you know, is that a freshman coming in? Do you shift somebody around that's returning? But it's interesting that you've got really good chemistry between, like I said, Erickson, Calder, Viette and Bedoin, and some guys who have played together and played really well together. So I think, you know, you're going to start to see, some things probably start off looking somewhat like that, where you've got that chemistry, that familiarity, and that's a good starting point to have. So that'll be good. And then, as you mentioned, obviously we'll know, much sooner than the start of next year on the eligibility issue in terms of when Brandon and Logan will be eligible to play. And certainly if they're not eligible to Christmas, you know, they won't have a ton of opportunity to rep in the top, playing group, because you're going to have to give those reps and that experience to guys who are ready to play from day one. But they will be with us, obviously, and in their game conditioning and, things like that will be fine once they are eligible, if that is the case, or not till later on. And then, you know, the other kind of, we've seen with one or two guys, Mitch Oliver had to go through it. Some other guys have gone through it, that when you're running scout power play, so when your penalty kill is going to go play, you know, Union or Notre Dame, you know, you're going to have guys like Logan and Brandon repping that scout power play or running the PK of other teams. So there is some valuable reps you can get out of those guys to help them get ready and pick some things up. But obviously, structurally, system-wise, they'll know everything we're going to do and be fully attuned that way. And, we'll kind of hope the appeal process goes well on those guys. But we'll update you once we know a little bit more.
Okay, you're going to have three newcomers coming in, two up front. It's not like the players I just mentioned are the only forwards we've got, but Josh Wildauer is a real good hockey player out of Coquitlam in the BC League. He'll be coming in and challenging to play regularly. Spencer Dembeski, who's out of Marquette, playing in Johnstown in the North American League. And then Benny Posa out of Des Moines in the USHL. Those are the three who are definitely ticketed to come in here for sure right now. And there's nothing to say you can't add one or two more if you can pick them up along the way.
Yeah, and whether they're committed now or not committed now. And, Bill kind of asked me earlier today to get everything ready. And I said, it's hard to do because you don't know. You know, what could walk in tomorrow and we just lost two returning guys to signing contracts and departing. And then your class is totally different. Or could get a call tonight saying, hey, one of those guys is no longer coming to Lake State. The way it's working now, I prefer to not say a whole lot till we know they're on campus in the fall. And that's just, it's really changed from 8-10 years ago when, your guys were coming and everybody was all in and their NLIs, kind of meant something and you couldn't get out as much. So, but those are some of the pieces. I think there might be one or two others as well that will probably end up. And again, some of those guys are already on board and committed as well. But, we like that group. They add a little bit different elements to the mix. And, we'll do a good job coming in. We didn't have a ton of losses up front. And so there's not a lot of opportunity, in front of guys to come in. And it's much different from 4 or 5 years ago when Anthony and Ellis and Mitch Holtz and Diego and Gage walked in. And, we didn't have a lot of experience and a lot of, there were a lot of opportunities and big roles to play. So that's really changing. And I think that's a good thing. That's where you want to be, fit a young guy in with some experience and some upperclassmen who have been really good.
I think what strikes me about this group in particular too, Damon, is you look at what the strength I think of this team has been in the last 2 years, it's been that forecheck. There's a ton of really good forecheckers in here. I think Boudon came along in that area of the game as the season went on, but Calder, good forechecker. Miura, Manns, Gamlin, Ambrosio, these guys get after defenders in their own zone and make them uncomfortable. And there's a lot of skill coming back in that area of the ice.
Well, I think, the way the game's gone, you have to be able to play with pace and skate. And, that's certainly been an emphasis. We want to continue to improve that way. You're never where you want to be or never get there. So, we want to keep getting faster and playing with a lot of pace and covering ice. So, those guys do a good job of that. I look at a few things like Diego led the country in goals last year. I don't know. Somebody gave me a stat somewhere that I think the 20 goal scorers back to back hasn't happened in a lot of years here. So to go from Diego to Max scoring, what do you end up, 22? 22, and gosh, only three of those were power play goals. So he was one of the highest goal scorers, 5-on-5 in the country. You know, so to me, you know, we want to have an uptick there. Our offense wasn't as strong this year, as consistent as we needed to be, but you got Hampus coming off a really strong junior year. Louis Bidon led the league in freshman scoring, which is tremendous. You know, Ashton Calder had a great year. He's over 50 career points. So he's at a really good pace to eclipse that 100 point barrier. If we can keep him around all 4 years, Pete Viet. So, you know, I think there's some really good things in place to help us be more consistent that way. And some of those guys coming in, you know, Josh Wildauer ended up one of the top scorers in the league. You know, Benny Posa plays a good hard role. Spencer plays a good hard role. Logan Genuine set a record for goals in his junior career. You know, and Brandon Percelli, I think, is a really, really good player, you know. And you don't go to Minnesota Duluth without being a high-end player. And, you know, I think both those guys are going to add a lot to our team as well.
Well, we're flat out of time here. I wanted to talk about a number of other things. I think one of the real highlights to the season we didn't even hit, that's taking back the Coppell Cup from Northern Michigan. Our season went one day longer than Northern Michigan's this year, too. And the big winter carnival performance, that was outstanding at Michigan Tech. But we're flat out of time here. And Matt, thanks for sitting in for a few minutes and all the great work you did this year. I still say that I know a lot of guys who do play-by-play in college hockey should really be doing games full-time somewhere.
Well, thank you.
And you did a great job this year. And Damon, I appreciate you post-game, pre-game, this show, Laker Hockey Talk. Good job all year. And we're just out of time here, so we're going to get out of here. I want to thank the fans for being here. We've got a great crew show up at the Antlers every Tuesday. We'll get together again next October. That's our last Laker Hockey Show for this year.
All right, well, thank you, guys. And, you know, I know we're out of time, but, you know, the best 1-2 punch in the league, as you said, Bill, you know, all your many, many years of service to all things Lake State, it's greatly appreciated to have a legend like you calling our games. And when you can't do it, as you said, Matt does an unbelievable job in your absence there. So we appreciate all you do at Sovereign and supporting the Lakers and all of our fans. I know we'll talk a little bit more in a couple weeks there at a Lakers show, but, you know, the best fans in college hockey and, you know, a great, great history, great program here. You know, we couldn't be, you know, more appreciative to have the opportunity to lead this program. And, you know, we're not satisfied. We'll come back hungrier, better. But thank you for all your support all season long.
That's another Laker Hockey Show, our last one of the year. We will have Laker Hockey Talk each month this summer. Bill Crawford for Matt Pocket and Damon Witten. So long from the Antlers on ESPN 1400.